Hev Tseng is a young professional turned author and public speaker. He began his early life in Cambodia and later immigrated to the United States. When you read his book, you will learn that Hev had experienced tragedy and hardship at a very young age. Despite what life threw at this young man, he earned a degree in architecture in Cambodia and a graduate degree at Boston University. Hev's book teaches us how to find and follow our passion. Today, Hev is an author and speaker making a huge contribution and inspiring many. We had the good chance and fortune to catch up with Hev today.
I mean, Hev, thanks for joining us today. Welcome to our show. When I conduct these interviews, Hev, the goal is to have our listeners purchase and read your book. Rather than asking you to recount the whole book for us, or recount the story of your early life in Cambodia, your struggles and your tragedies, please tell us how your experience as a child and then as a young man growing up in Cambodia shaped you into the person you are today.
Yes, hi, Eric. Yeah, that is a very important question. If you read my book, "Your Differences Are the Key to Your Success," you're going to learn that I was born and grew up in Cambodia before I came to the U.S., and because I grew up in a very rural area sharing border with Thailand in a very poor family, let me tell you this, life is very difficult over there compared to the living in the U.S. And it was very, very difficult just to make a living over there, even at the present. So because I have been grow up in that kind of environment, and it teach me that however I am going to be successful in the U.S. and this rich country that has a lot of those opportunities, that I have to be humble. I have to learn how to be humble. And because back then in Cambodia, I used to work in the farm on the rice paddy with my dad. And I realized that hard work is necessary, not only in the U.S., not only in Cambodia. It is necessary in the U.S. And hard work is going to pay off. I used to be to work as a farmer with my dad. And as you know, farmers are people of faith. They believe in what they do. They have faith in what they do. And they work hard on it. And also, I'm the only child in the whole family, in my whole family, who was lucky enough to finish high school. And then got a chance to finish college before I moved to the U.S. And I'm quite surprised that some students in Cambodian family or also in other family in the U.S., they didn't value higher education in this country. They didn't see the value of education in this country. I know that some Cambodian students in Cambodian communities, they didn't even finish high school. They dropped out and they got involved in something else. And because I have been living over there for close to 20 years in Cambodia, and if you compare the value of education in Cambodia and in the U.S., even the worst school in the U.S., it is a Harvard style in Cambodia. So because the fact that I have been in Cambodia and now I have been in the U.S., I would say that there are a lot of opportunity, there are a lot of things in this country that people take it for granted. So basically, because of my growing up in Cambodia, before I came to this country, I realized that the way that I have seen, the thing that I have seen in Cambodia in the past, has saved me the way that I think, the way that I have approached to a lot of things in my life. It teach me to be humble. It teach me that hard work is going to pay off. And it teach me the value of higher education. And even if I'm going to have a family, at least in my whole family, they at least going to have a master's degree, not just a college. And it is the thing that has shaped my value and who I am right now.
Well, your book talks a great length, or talks at great length about differences, each of us being a unique person. And I feel under the best circumstances, it takes quite a while for each of us even to understand ourselves. What would you say to someone who's, let's just say, 20, 21 years old, trying to discern who they are and what sets them apart from others in a positive way?
Yes, Rick, that is a very difficult question to answer. And actually, a lot of people know that they should be themselves. People tell them that being yourself is the best thing that you should do. And the point is it should just be yourself, and it should not economically valuable in the marketplace. It's not going to give you much either. And actually, to know yourself is a very long journey. It is the journey of self-discovery. And if you just take the journey by yourself, it's going to take you very long to know who you are, what your values are, and also what I wrote in my book is our differences. So basically, to my understanding, there are two kinds of differences. One is physical appearance, which I call outer differences, and another one is inner differences. So if you can tell, even among two white American or two Cambodian immigrants, they don't look the same. One is maybe short and chubby, another one maybe tall, handsome, and attractive like you and me. And the most important is our inner differences. So our inner differences is we are different from each other also in terms of our passion, talent and skills and our purpose in life. So basically if you just start out in life, maybe you around 16, 20, 21 years old, I would suggest that you should looking for him. And maybe you should read a lot of things, and the best way is just looking for someone who has a lot of knowledge, who has a lot of wisdom in the thing that you want to do. And ask for him. That is the best way that you could approach it. And if you just try to do it on yourself, if you just to make sense this up, if you just want to do to know your differences on your own, it's going to take you very long. So that is my idea. If you're just starting out in life.
So as a follow-up, for those of us who are fortunate enough to go to college, we all have to pick a major. You picked architecture, I picked accounting. But even after completing a successful college and professional career, one may find that a particular expertise may even constrain what is our true potential. In other words, the major we pick may not define what we are, what we ultimately will become.
Yes, in the book, I tell a story that the reason I ended up studying architecture, it was not my choice. It is because of an advice from an elderly man in my hometown, in my village, that I asked him. Because I came from a rural area sharing border with Thailand, and when I finished high school, I moved to Phnom Penh, the capital city of Cambodia, and to take an entrance examination to study at university. And yes, I got admitted to school with tuition and scholarship to study mechanical engineering, architecture, and economics. Because I didn't know anybody in the capital city, and then I decided to move back to visit my hometown and ask an advice from the elderly man in the village. And he told me that because I was very, very skinny back then, At 16 years old, I weigh less than 100 pounds. And he told me that because I was very, very skinny, mechanical engineering was not a good fit for me. He said he knew a guy, had the same degree, and he worked on the rice field, fluffing, operating tractor, fluffing the rice field. And he told me that I was too skinny to do that. And because of his advice, and it was also because of the popularity of architectural major back then, in the whole country of 12 million people, they took only 30 students each year. And that's why I decided I ended up studying architecture, even though I didn't know what my passion is and what my talent is. And basically, that is the thing that happening to most people. When you start choosing a career or a major or study, most people, they are in the same situation as I did. And it is maybe because of the popularity of the major, or maybe because of the peer pressure or family pressure, that's why they decided, that's why they end up with studying that major. And when they are in the working force, and when they start working, most people realize that, oh, no, this is not the thing that I like. And that's why it is not the passion. And that's why it is said that 8 out of people who work in the working force, they didn't like what they do because it is not the passion and they hate it. And usually when the thing that you do, which is not your passion, it is highly likely that you're not going to be very good at it. And it could give you a lot of stress, especially when you have the responsibility to do well enough. And that is one of the reasons that a lot of people in corporate America, they need a lot of motivation. And actually, if the thing that you do, which is your passion, you don't really need motivation. You are already passionate about it. You are already energized about it. So that's why it is important that you should follow your passion. And more importantly, you should also find a way to make a living from it. It's not a fortune. A lot of people tell me that, like, a lot of books wrote about passion. And they tell you that, like, if you follow your passion, the money will come up to you. But in reality, it is not true. You could follow your passion, but if you don't find a way to make a living from it, it's going to be very difficult. And it is highly likely that you will not be able to do it very long, especially when you have a family or significant others to support. So to my understanding is, to my belief is, success is doing the thing that you like and then being able to find a way to make a living from it. It's not a fortune. When you are able to do so, it is highly likely that you're going to reach your potential, your highest potential, and you're going to be happy and successful at the same time.
Well, you talk a good length about the value of a good and true mentor. You explain to us what the difference is between a teacher and a mentor. What does a mentor mean to you, and how does a young person go about finding a suitable mentor?
Yes, Eric, I'm glad that you asked this question. And I think, like, if I'm looking back at what I am doing currently, the reason that I don't achieve the level of success that I want and at the speed that I want, it is because of the lack of mentor from the beginning. Actually, mentoring, which is the way of teaching, mentoring is the transferring of knowledge or wisdom without having you to go through pain and suffering. And it could be the shortcut to your success. Basically, like, you've got to know, like, who a good mentor is. A good mentor is someone who cares more about your future more than your present. They are interested in your success more than your affection. And they want to see the correction of you more than the celebration of you. And it is said that in our life, the speed of success that we have is always in proportion to our willingness to be corrected by a good mentor. And to find a good mentor is not easy. And actually, like mentor and teacher, they are slightly different. Like mentor is a teacher, but teacher may not be a mentor. A teacher is someone who primarily concerned with imparting information, nothing else. But a mentor who is someone who cares more about your future and who is someone who have done what you want to do and have been where you want to go, and so that they could be the best person who could help you out. So if you are young and if you want to find a good mentor, you should understand that there are two factors that define a good mentor. A good mentor is someone who is willing to help you. There are sort of people who are qualified to be your mentor. They have been where you want to go, they have done what you want to do, but they may not be willing to help you out. And another factor that determines a good mentor is they have done what you want to do. They have achieved the level of success that you want to have. Like in our life, if you ask someone to teach you, if you ask someone for the advice, a lot of people will be glad to give you an advice. But the point is, they may not have the qualification to be a good mentor. And that's why you got to know these two factors, like the thing that determine a good mentor. Someone who is willing to help you, and someone who already achieved the levels of success that you want to have. I would say that if you want to find a suitable mentor, you've got to ask. And if you don't ask, I don't think someone is going to take the time and energy to help you out unless they have a vested interest in you. So you've got to ask around. And if by luck, maybe you could find someone they are willing to help you. And the best way to find a mentor is to hire them, to pay them money. And that's why they say that in this country, the best way to get knowledge or education is to buy it. You have to pay the price for it. So you could learn something on your own. You could go through all the process of self-discovery, but the point is, it's going to take you very long. And when you have a good mentor, when you have someone who are willing to put the time in and energy to help you to be successful, you should be grateful for it. And my last advice to you is, you should respect your mentor, you should observe your mentor, study your mentor, but do not worship them. Because the relationship that you're going to have with your mentor is to enable your growth, but not to establish guru worship. And believe in yourself that one day you could surpass them. And he is the most important of all. You have to be open-minded. You have to be teachable and accountable. Otherwise, any good mentor can't help you if you're not accountable and if you're not teachable. Because the main essence of mentoring is taking action. That means they give you the best advice, they give you the best way to achieve your dream and goal, but ultimately, It is you who are responsible taking action, who are responsible for your treatment goals. And if you don't take action, even the best mentor in the world can help you out. So remember that the main essence of mentoring is taking action.
Well, that's a very important point. And in your book, you refer to your background in Cambodia on the farm, living the farm life, and you talk about the various animals on the farm and how some are flexible and some are really not. Some are very stubborn. And, you know, we all see that when I read your book, and I, as I promised all mm-hmm. the people that we do interviews with, I'll read the book from cover to cover. You know, I see myself as sometimes the sheep, you know, the person that's very stubborn and slow to change. And I guess that's really where you're driving your point for it, is that, you know, you have to listen. If someone's mentoring you, you have to listen to what they suggest and be willing to make the changes.
Yes, like regarding to change is something that everybody faces. And change is more often it's scary, especially when there is some level of uncertainty in it. My most fear in life is when I move from Cambodia to the U.S. And actually, yes, there are a lot of level of uncertainty in it, and there are a lot of level of change in it. But the point is, like, because change is always there, you should be prepared. And you should expect it. Otherwise, it's going to be very difficult to deal with change. It's going to be very difficult to cope up with change. So you have to learn to expect it. And the best way to learn how to deal with change is to understand the nature of change. There are two natures of change. One is just like a linear change from point A to point B. That means, just let me give you an example. An egg is broken, and then it has been turned into an omelet. Yeah, it changed from an egg, and then now it become an omelet. The underlying message is there is no scientific ways, there is no doctor or scientist could reverse the cause of change. There is no one in this world that could change an omelet back into an egg. So this kind of change, you've got to be very, very careful, because when you make the change, you can't reverse it back. And another way of change is something that repeat more often. It kind of like circle change, circular change. Let's say today is Monday, tomorrow is the Tuesday, then the day after tomorrow is Wednesday. And then we have Sunday and Monday again. This is the repetitive change. And if you look at the event or the change in our life, most of the change, it could be something that abrupt, shock, unexpected. But most of the change is something in circle, something that we could like expect it if we are prepared. So basically, like, to deal with change is you have to be prepared, and you have to know the nature of change. And if you make the preparation, you're going to be surprised, and you will be in better position on how to deal with it. And you could, like, from my point of view, is change should be a chance for your improvement, because change, there is no improvement without change. So rather than hate the change, you should accept it, and you should learn how to take advantage of it so that you could make some improvement in some part of your life. So I guess this is the best way that you should approach on how to deal with change.
Well, we're getting towards the end of our interview, Hev, and tell us about the exciting things that you're working on now, perhaps some of your upcoming book signings and speaking engagements. What do you have to share with us today?
Yes, actually, I'm still releasing the book. I'm still publishing the book on Amazon. I've got a lot of speaking engagements through the book. And so far, I have given speeches, around 60 speeches to Rotary, Kiwanis, and Lion Club, and a lot of speaking engagements coming up. And because of the book, and because of the message that I have shared with those civic organizations, and they tell me that this is the kind of message that students should listen to. And so far, I did contact some school district, and the people who are working over there who are also Cambodian likely to get speaking engagement in the school, in the high school and college. And I'm really excited about what I do because this is my passion. This is the thing that I want to do for my whole life. And as I tell you in the past, that you should do something which is your passion, and then you should figure out a way how to make a living from it. It's not a fortune, because if the thing that you do which is your passion, it is highly likely that you're going to be very, very good at it. Even if at the present you are not very good at it, but it is more highly likely that in the future you're going to be at the top of your field. And yes, this is the thing that I like to do. This is the thing that I want to share the message to the student. And let me tell you this, like, if I knew what I know now, that my differences are the key to my success, yes, it would have saved me many years, maybe close to 10 years of my life. But the point is, like, through most of my life, I didn't know what my differences were, and it didn't hit me either when some of my close friends and families want me to be someone else other than myself. And this is the thing that I do, and also have started writing another book, which is some kind of related to the topic of differences. I'm not quite sure of the main title right now, but the subtitle is How to Turn Your Disadvantages into Your Competitive Edge. And I'm very excited about my second book.
Well, I want to say to all our listeners that Hev's first book, Your Differences Are the Key to Your Success, How to Turn Your Differences into your Most Valuable Assets, it's a major contribution. You shared a lot of your life, which you had a lot of difficulties getting going over there in Cambodia. You've come over here and pursued higher education and career in architecture, and now you're pursuing your passion as an author and a speaker. And I congratulate you and thank you for your time spent today with us.
Yes, thank you so much, Eric, for having me. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.